This year, our theme for the year is Joyful in Hope. Joyful in Hope. And so because it's Joyful in Hope, I decided that the first sermon I was going to do for this year was going to be entitled, Have a Happy New Year. You know, happiness is such a big thing that people pursue. And, you know, over the Christmas, I really hope you had a happy time. You know, we got back just last weekend from our time in Virginia, in Winchester, Virginia, in the States, where we spent Christmas with Jack Meisinger's parents, Sarah's in-laws. And let me just see if I can show you. That's where they are. Is this working? Okay, so we're in Virginia. Here, this is actually on top of the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. Now, if you're over a certain age, that means more to you than if the younger generation. But we have so many young people in here. Oh my goodness! And so we went hiking, and it was fun. And we played games. I don't know if you can see this, but. Oh, let's move off this. This is Jack's father, Sarah's father-in-law. They were all hanging around playing games and all kinds of things. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. But what I wanted to do was to start off in reading from Matthew chapter 5. And if you have your Bible, you can turn there or you can just follow along on the screen. And we're going to pick up at the beginning of Jesus' what's known as the Sermon on the Mount. And in verse 1 of Matthew chapter 5, it says, Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You know, some people have entitled this passage the Beatitudes, as in the kind of attitudes we ought to have as Christians. But when you listen to what Jesus is saying here, you think, what does he mean by blessed are those who mourn, or blessed are the poor in spirit? Or it doesn't sound like our understanding of happiness, right? I mean, when you think about happiness, what do you think of? What comes to mind when you think about being happy? Comfort, laughter, what else? Joy, yeah? You know, that I actually did a quick look on Amazon, right, just to see if books about... Oh, do you want to say something? Go ahead. Oh, spending time with your husband. You've got a good one, Rick. I looked on Amazon to see how many books there were on happiness, and honestly, there are... A lot. Let's just say that everything from how to be happy to just happy, or you know, where to find happiness, and it's unbelievable. Just you read some of the summaries, just the people's concepts of happiness. You know, they've done many surveys about what it means to be happy. There was a survey done in Psychology Today a few years back, and they asked they surveyed thousands of people just to get an understanding of what happiness was. The conclusion of the article was they couldn't quite define what happiness was. They could define what unhappiness was. They could say things. Unhappiness included things like seeing what other people have and things that you don't have. Or wanting something that you can't get. That kind of stuff. You know, there's even a term for this now. It's called FOMO. FOMO, fear of missing out. And I never experienced that until yesterday. Yesterday, we had Paul and Jemima around at our house, and Andy and Sandra. We were talking about the plans for the church for 2019. And I was asking Paul, hey, how's the running going? Because Paul and I, we'd both signed up for London Marathon last year. We decided this year we're going to run the London Marathon together. And then towards the end of the year, both of us got ill and sick, and then I had a hip injury. I had to have some physio on that, and it's better now. But we were discussing it, Paul said to me at the end of last year, he said, you know, maybe this is a sign that we shouldn't run the marathon. And I thought, you're wimping out on me, aren't you? But then we talked about it, and I said, well, I'll consider that. And then I talked to a few of the brothers in church, and I spoke to Mohan, and he said, yeah, you know, your health has been a bit challenging these last few months. Maybe it might be a little bit too much just pushing yourself. I thought, yeah, maybe you're right. Because, you know, I want to be humble, listen to advice, you know, and everything else. So then yesterday I just asked, but I've still been running. I asked Paul, hey, how's the running going? He said, oh, yeah, I did 8 miles yesterday. I did 7 miles the day before. I said, that's great. You're doing really well. He said, well, no, I'm doing okay. He said, you know, the marathon is just not that far away. And I said, hold on a second. What do you mean the marathon's not far away? He said, yeah, he says, I'm signed up for the marathon. I said, you what? We agreed that we're both going to pull out together. We'll do it the following year. He goes, yeah, I reconsidered. And so I had a spot, but that spot has been taken by someone else now. And now I'm thinking, I can't believe you did that. But you know, the thing is, I actually did the marathon 10 years ago. And you know, the funny thing about our memories is we have selective memories. Because we always reflect back, you know, even if something was challenging, you know, all I remember are the high points. I remember when I was doing the marathon 10 years ago, I remember the crowds, I remember the cheering, I remember just the feeling of crossing the finish line. That was all fantastic. But then I forget just the pain of the actual event. During the actual event where I actually suffered massive, I was actually sick when I did the marathon. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do it again, because I felt like I didn't do myself justice. And the first thing anyone asks you when you say, oh, I've done a marathon, is, what time did you run? And I don't like that question, because my time wasn't what I wanted it to be. I'll tell you what my time was. In the marathon, up into the first 13 miles, I ran 1 hour and 40 minutes, the first 13 miles. And that was on track for the goal I'd set myself. But around about mile 14, 15, then I started to get cramp. I started to get all kinds of things. And in the end, one of the St. John's ambulance men saw me running along. He said, excuse me, mate, can you come over here? you know you're in a bad way when you're being pulled over in a marathon. And he pulled me over. He said, are you okay? I said, well, I just got... He said, here, let me help you out. And he gave me a massage on my thighs. And I thought, oh, so much better. And then I got up and I looked at my watch. And I thought, okay, I'm still on track. I can still do this. And I just ran quickly to try and make up for lost time. And then I got cramps again. And then another guy pulled me over. I had 3 massages on that marathon. But it was horrible because every time I got pulled over, I kept seeing all these people going past me. And in the end, I thought, I can't keep trying to catch up because now I'm just going to kill myself. Let me just set a goal to finish. And as I was setting the goal to finish, I went a lot slower. I started being overtaken by all the fun runners. I mean, I'm talking a guy dressed as a fire truck who ran past me. There was a guy dressed as a banana ran past me. And then, to add insult to injury, was when this old-age pensioner ran past me. I know she was old-age pensioner, because on the back she was wearing this T-shirt which said, 67 and still going. And I thought, I'm not having that, so I ran past her. But you forget these things. You forget, and so we make ourselves unhappy by these unrealistic expectations. This fear of, oh, I don't have this, or I don't have that, or I'm missing out on what everyone else has got. And, you know, in this survey, or a survey recently carried out just at the end of last year, they were surveying the top happiest places in the world. And they're talking about countries. And they looked at all different factors. They looked at income, they looked at healthcare, they looked at lots of different indicators. Do you know what the number one... I don't think that even made it onto... in this. Sweden? Denmark? Finland? Finland was the number one country. And in fact, all the Nordic countries, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, they've all been in the top 10 for the last decade or more. It's unbelievable. Britain didn't make it in the top 10, nor did America, unfortunately. But what these surveys don't tell you is that there's also lots of negative data as well. So the number one country for increase in mental health in the under 25s, in mental health disorders, Finland. And the other Nordic countries also rank up there as well. It's surprising, right? You know, happiness in worldly terms, and again, people can't even quite define it, but happiness in worldly terms is temporary at best. You know, we think that if only I can have more than the other person, if only I can be doing better than my neighbor, if only, you know, keeping up with the Joneses syndrome, if only I can do this, or then we can be happy. But that's not true. You know, when we were growing up, we always wanted, we compare things like, you know, my dad's stronger than your dad, or my mum can beat up your mum, or, you know, this kind of stuff. And we had these, and it's always this competitive spirit. But the reality is, none of those things genuinely make us happy to the core. There's always going to be an emptiness there. You know, we think if only I had more money, if only I had more time, if only I had better possessions or whatever. That's not true. Let me show you. You know, this week, I saw in my Facebook feed, because over the Christmas I had a great time, and by a great time I mean I put on 7 pounds, and I saw this in my Facebook feed. It was an advert for looking for men for this fitness thing. You have to be 30 plus, and you can sign up 6 weeks boot camp training for free. That's what caught my attention. I thought, oh, that looks good, for free. And so I entered my email address, got an email back. You make an appointment to go and to see one of the coordinators there. And in fact, that guy there, I don't know if you can see him, this fella right here holding the boxing glove pads, his name's Ben. He's like the archetypal poster child for fitness. I went in there, he opened the door, and he's about 6'3", built like the Thor from the Marvel movies. And he welcomed me in. He said, oh, yeah, come on in, let me tell you about the program. And first of all, he explains what it means. He says, okay, so we've got 5 different camp training sessions. 3 of them are indoors, 2 of them outdoors. You can come to all of them. The more you come to, the better your results will be. And he talked about, and he showed me this book of people who have been on the training course before. And the book consisted of nothing other than before and after photos of the people who'd been on there. And you see them before looking like, you know, Mr. Blobby, and then you see them afterwards looking like, you know, Chris Evans, and you think, whoa, this is awesome. And he says, you know, the best result we've had is this guy's lost 32 pounds in 6 weeks. And he says the average weight loss, he said, of everyone who does this program is around 20 pounds, the average. I thought, whoa, I only need to lose 10. That sounds good to me. And he was going on, and then he was talking about, can you make this time, can you make this time? I thought, this is great, I'll sign. But then, after all, he went through the whole spiel. He said, does that sound good? I said, it sounds great. He said, okay, so here's what it's going to cost. So I took a picture. This is a picture from my phone. And he says, okay, so you've got this £399 deposit, hit your goal, you win back your money, and so basically you receive your 6 weeks challenge for free. Doesn't sound free to me. You're paid. Or he says option two, because he'd like to make you feel like you've got a choice, right? Option two, you can join up on a monthly membership, and there it's only £137 a month. But then again, if you hit your goal, then we deduct it from whatever. And so you end up with 6 weeks free, but you still got to pay for the other 2 weeks of the membership, because it's a, you know, monthly membership, and it's 6 weeks, and so you've got 2 weeks, and it, basically you end up paying hundreds of pounds. I'm like, no. I said, well, what I actually said was, oh, that sounds great. Let me go and discuss it with my wife. And that is the last he heard of me. But what the world has to offer, that it promises so much. And you think, oh, this is great. I'm going to be in great shape. Come February, this is going to be awesome. But then when the rubber hits the road, you realize it doesn't fulfill its promises. This week, this is the richest couple in history. I mean, you look at all the pictures of them and you think, wow, what a happy couple. I mean, they must be so happy. I mean, this guy, I think his net worth numbers in the hundreds of billions. And if you don't know, this is Jeff Bezos. He's the founder of Amazon. Well, just this week, they announced that they're going to be separated. In fact, this is the statement they put out on Twitter. It says, as our family and close friends know, after a long period of exploration and trial separation, we have decided to divorce and continue our shared lives as friends, the couple said in the joint statement. We feel incredibly lucky to have found each other and deeply grateful for every one of the years we've been married to each other. If we'd known we'd separate after 25 years, we would do it all again. Well, after that statement came out, then the next day there were articles posting actually he'd been unfaithful to his wife, and there's all other stuff going on, and it was just a real mess. And what was it's horrible. But fortunately for her, the state that they live in, she gets half the wealth. So Forbes predict that by this year she'll enter one of the top 10 wealthiest people in the world after the divorce goes through. You know, we think, oh, if I can have this, I can be happy. Or if I can have that, it's not true. That survey carried out in Psychology Today, they found actually that there was marginal difference between the wealthy and the poor in terms of happiness indexes. You wouldn't have thought that, right? They found that there was marginal differences between happiness measured across ethnic groups. They found that there was marginal differences between different age groups in terms of happiness. That's pretty surprising. You know, what we think of as gonna make us happy doesn't necessarily follow through. You know, real happiness comes from something much deeper. You know, Jesus in Matthew 5 and verse 3, and we read the whole Beatitudes, but we're only going to focus on just a couple because of time. And I've put up various translations of the first one in verse 3, just so you can get a bit of an understanding. When he says, blessed are the poor in spirit, some translations say, blessed are those who are spiritually needy. Blessed are those who are poor and realize their need for him. God blesses those people who depend only on him. You know, the word in the Greek, the original language, for poor, it meant extremely poor, almost destitute. And he says, "Blessed are those people, because ultimately, then they've got a different spirit towards God. If they know that they're destitute without Him, he says, great blessings belong to those who know they're spiritually in need, or happy are those who know they're spiritually poor, or blessed are those who recognize that they are spiritually helpless." Most of us like to think of ourselves as being quite self-sufficient. We don't like to think of ourselves in terms of I'm in need. We like to think of ourselves of captains of our own destiny, that we can control. And in fact, psychologists have come up with a happiness formula. I think it's H equals S plus C plus V, where H stands for levels of happiness, S stands for your set happiness point, which includes your genetic makeup and your upbringing and how you're raised. C stands for your circumstances, which you may or may not have some control over. But V stands for voluntary activities, and that you have complete control over, and so that can change your happiness index. And we think, oh, if we do certain things, then we can be happy. If we give ourselves certain areas, we can be happy. And it can make differences, but it's not eternal. It doesn't last. Jesus says the ones who are really blessed, and the word for blessed, it means just extremely happy, ecstatic. He says the ones who are truly happy, they're the ones who know that they need God. And he says theirs is the kingdom of heaven. What is that? Well, kingdom of heaven is where God is in control. The kingdom of heaven is where God is the king and we are not. That we're not the ones who are trying to control our lives, but instead we say, no, whatever God says, he's my king, I follow his plan, his laws. I'll obey his commandments because he is king and I accept his kingship over my life. And that continues not just here on earth, but even after we die. And he said, that's where real happiness comes from. It's just recognizing, actually, we need God in our lives. And if we have God in our lives, it changes everything. You know, this world that we live in can be deceiving. Because we forget that we're only here for a short time. We forget that it's just a temporary situation. That life is finite. It will end at some point. Hopefully it'll end later rather than sooner. But it will end. And it's fragile. We don't know when it's going to end. But after this life, there's more to come. And that's reality. This, as it were, is nothing more than something temporary. You know, this 2 nights ago, about 4:30 in the morning, I fell out of bed. And I fell out of bed with a loud thump, landed on my leg, and then Julie woke up and she said, "Are you okay?" I said, "It's fine, honey. I'm just having a dream." She said, "What kind of dream were you having?" I said, "In my dream, someone was shooting at me." And this is never, I've never fallen out of bed in my life. I said, "But I think it's part of it is related to the jet lag because I still haven't gotten over the jet lag, and so I was going to bed later." And that night I was up. It was Friday night. I was up late and I was watching this movie, and then Jack came downstairs and he watched the end of the movie with me because we both had jet lag, and in this movie this guy was being shot at by these gangsters, and I went to bed and I must have been asleep for about maybe an hour and a half when I rolled out of bed. And this guy was shooting at me, and I was rolling. I was on the ground. I was rolling to get out of the way of the bullets. And I rolled. I fell. And then I woke up, and then I realized, whoa, it's just a dream. But, you know, I reflect on it later, and I thought, I am so lucky. Because normally when I go to sleep at night, I have a bottle of water sitting by my bedside, so in case I get thirsty in the middle of the night. And just before I'd gone to bed, Julie said, "Do you have any water?" And I said, "Yeah, here." And I gave her the water, so she had some tablets she was taking, and she'd left it on her side of the bed. And so the next morning I was thinking, oh my goodness, if that bottle of water had been there, and I'd fallen on top of it in the middle of the night, imagine trying to explain that to the accident emergency department, or actually worse, imagine if. Instead of rolling to the left, I'd roll to the right, and I'd knock Julie out of bed onto a bottle, and then she had to go to hospital, and then try and explain that to the police. "Yes, officer, I was asleep at the time." You know, it was a dream. It felt real. And sometimes we have dreams that feel real. Sometimes, when I was a kid growing up, I used to dream of finding money. And I would find this money, and I'd put it underneath my pillow, so that when I woke up, it'd still be there. And every time I woke up, it wasn't there. And the first few times this happened, I accused my brothers because we shared the bed. And then I realized it's just a dream. You know, this life is just a dream. One day we're going to wake up. And we'll wake up in eternity. And can you imagine how crazy it would be to stand before God and explain why we did the things that we did in our time on earth that have eternal consequences for our a time after death? "Oh yeah, I did that because it felt real and I felt like that was the thing to pursue." And why? That's not reality. That's just a temporary. Why are you doing things that's going to affect real life? Why are we doing things in this life that's going to affect eternity? Our actions today have consequences in the future. What we pursue now will determine where we end up later. Paul and Jemima around at our house yesterday, as I shared. And Jemima, she just got back from visiting her parents in Ghana, who've both been ill. And she shared, you know, in the airport, she said, as I was in the airport, she said, I bumped into someone that I knew from primary school. In fact, I heard this voice calling out, Jemima. And she said, I turned around and I saw this guy. His name was Herbert. No, Ebo. His name was Ebo. Ebo Hansen. And it turns out that this guy had been bullying her at school. He'd been throwing things in the classroom, and the teacher had told him to stop throwing things. And then he threw something, and I can't remember how all the sequence of events, but in the playground afterwards, they got into a fight. This is Jemima Rowden. This is Jemima Rowden, Paul Rowden, our elder, the one who did the welcome. His wife. Elder's wife. And she said it wasn't just Ebo, but it was a bunch of his friends all attacking her in the playground, and she was going crazy. I'm going to ask Jemima to go ahead and stand at this time. Thanks, Jemima. She wouldn't hurt a fly. She said, you know, there was a time when she was walking in down shopping in London, and she was in a shop, and there was one of these boys who was in this gang who had tried to beat her up. Was there serving her at the till. He recognized her, and he said, Jemima. She looked at him, and he pointed to his face. Do you remember this? A scar running down his face that Jemima had left at the age of 11. She said, oh, hi, Herbert. Yes, I remember it very well. His name was Herbert Bully. That's his real name, Herbert Bully. Bully by name, bully by nature. He still carries the scar from his actions back from when he was a kid. Actions have consequences. What we do will have an outcome that we will have to live with. You know, we don't have time to go. I was going to go through a couple more, but we don't have time because of I got here late this morning, and I was actually on time. And then, lo and behold, there was a broken-down car in the roundabout, and that delayed me a little bit. But that's okay, because I made it up. And I was just about to turn into Mount Street, and I was following my sat-nav. And, of course, it's our first time meeting here for a regular Sunday service. I drove past the Mount Street turn. Or it wasn't Mount Street. I was looking at Mount Street. It's Bridge something. And I drove past it, and I thought, hold on a second. Kayleigh goes, that was our turn. I'm like, no, because I would have been on time. And then the sat-nav says, another 10 minutes. Because you have to go all the way around the block. And when you're in that situation, it's like everything's against you. Because first is the red light. Then there's this learner driver. Then there's... But anyway, all that to say, I would have gone through a bit more, but I don't have time to go through a bit more. But later on in this message, Jesus says, you know, the thing we should pursue is God. He says, if we seek first the kingdom and God's righteousness, then all of this will be given to us. Happiness is not a goal to pursue. Happiness comes as a result of pursuing something worth pursuing, and that's a relationship with God. And if you're visiting today and you don't have that, then let me encourage you, ask someone to show you how you can get that. What does it mean to pursue God? How can you find true happiness? It's in a relationship with God. How do you do that? Ask. If you're unsure, come speak to me. But I promise you, that's the only way we'll truly be happy this year. Amen.
I think I'm going to walk around Jemima a bit more carefully now. I used to give a nice warm hug, so I'd be a bit of a distance. Amen. It's great to be at the start of a new year. It's great to be, I mean, we did this same lesson in our house church a week ago. And I think the same things really come to mind. I think one of the biggest things is we can have an influence on this. It's not God saying if you're blessed or if you are poor, you're blessed. I think we can choose certain things. And I think the great thing about the Gospels and the Bible, we can choose to be poor in spirit. And it is a choice, and it can be your daily life can demonstrate whether you are poor in spirit. So, for example, if you maybe choose not to pray in the day, that's an indication that maybe you probably don't need God in the day. That's an indication. I'm just giving you some clues, amen? Because maybe you're thinking, well, I think I'm poor in spirit. And just circumstances, when things maybe are not going as you'd like, and it's a great place to be poor in spirit, when you can recognize these things and understand that God is bigger and God knows more and God works in different ways, and then you can just still have the joyful spirit because you know that God is working in a way that we don't understand. And ultimately, as Mike shared, the issue is what happens when we all die, because that's we all know what, that will happen. And that is that will be the ultimate test for all of us. So let me encourage us to, certainly for the year ahead, to certainly be joyful in hope, but also just to just be very aware of your dependency or how much you depend on God and what that looks like in your life. Because the blessedness, the rewards, I think, are incredible. They will impact your marriage if you're married. They'll impact your children. They'll impact your workplace. They'll impact your friends. It will impact those around you. It'll impact your parents. So many things will come out if you demonstrate that poorness in spirit. So let me encourage us all to do that. And thank you, Mike, for that. I just want to welcome a couple of visitors from Thames Valley. I was given this note from Paul. Sheila, Nancy, and Becky. Are you all here? Wouldn't you mind standing for us so we can see you? My mathematics may be poor. I did go to Imperial College, by the way, but I only counted two. But I've got three names here, but I'm sure they're all here. Did someone stand? You stood up as well? It's not the mathematics, it's my eyesight that's going, I think. I am poor in spirit, amen? Let's all stand for a final song, Praise is Heard Around the World.